seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Tonight, game one of the Western Conference semifinals. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national. And that's what we have planned for you today. We're going to divide it up, a little local, a little national. Of course, we'll be talking a lot of Utah Jazz basketball on top of everything else. The Jazz tonight taking on the Los Angeles Clippers. Game one of the Western Semis at Vivint Smart Home Arena. Bad news for Utah, though, as we prepare for tonight's game. Mike Conley has been ruled out with a hamstring strain. I'm not saying it's a death sentence tonight for Utah, but as I alluded to on the show yesterday, I think that Mike Conley is one of the most important players in the series for the Jazz. They may be able to get a win tonight at home. You ride momentum. You're well rested. You're going to be in front of the hometown crowd. Utah will not win the series without Mike Conley. They won't. I think he's going to be that important on both sides of the ball. Again, going back to the way the Clippers beat the Mavericks, they threw out a very small lineup. I guarantee you Lou will do the same tonight. When you have that small lineup, Conley's going to play a massive factor in neutralizing that. It's something that Dallas could not do. They had no answer for it. But injuries have been a problem for Mike Conley all year long. He's missed significant time because of injuries to both hamstrings. That's an injury that just does not heal. And that's what has me a little bit concerned about this. Missed six games in February, missed nine in April and May due to tightness in the right hamstring. Anyone that suffered a hamstring pull, it takes so much time for those to heal that if it hasn't healed properly since Utah got this long break after getting rid of the Grizzlies in five games and the Clippers, they went seven with Dallas. It still hasn't healed. I don't know if we see Conley in game two. You can't rush him back. We've seen hamstring injuries hamper the Houston Rockets with Chris Paul. That may have been the reason why James Harden and Chris Paul didn't go to the NBA championship due to Chris Paul's hamstring. So I think it is a very serious injury for the Jazz. It is something to monitor. I don't know how this affects the game tonight, but it will affect the series if Conley is not out there. He will not play tonight in game one. That has been official. We'll take a look at some of the other news coming out of the national sports scene. A very sad news and note. Jim Fossil, former New York Giants head coach, former Utah Utes head coach, has passed away at the age of 71. The Giants said today that the family informed them of his death. His son, John Fossil, currently the special teams coordinator for the Cowboys, he did confirm the death to the Los Angeles Times earlier today. When you look at the resume of Jim Fossil, this guy dedicated his life to football. 1997 NFL Coach of the Year. Coached the Giants from 97 to 2003. Took them to a Super Bowl, which they lost to the Baltimore Ravens. But he still got them there. 58 victories places him behind Steve Owen, Tom Coughlin, and Bill Parcells among Giant coaches. So he's up there with three really well-established coaches in the game of football. And when you look at some of the players that he coached while in New York, one of them being Michael Strahan, he's a Hall of Famer. I've just always felt that Fossil is a very underrated coach. And like I said, he dedicated his life to football. Played quarterback at Fullerton College, USC, and Long Beach State. He was drafted in the seventh round by the Bears. Played briefly in the World Football League. But many around the game would consider him an offensive expert. And as I mentioned, spent some time with the University of Utah from 1985 to 1989. But he'll always be remembered as a New York Giant head coach taking them to the Super Bowl. Some sad news, passing of Jim Fossil confirmed as he has died at the age of 71. Let's take a look at the schedule in the national sports scene. We already talked about the Jazz. Two games on tap tonight. We get Utah and the Clippers at 8 p.m. The first game of the playoffs tonight is at 5:30. The Hawks will take on the 76ers. Atlanta steals home court advantage, picking up a victory in game one. They blew this massive 20-plus point lead. Philly battled back, had a chance to win it. You just see things in these series. You see little things. And I saw all I needed to see in game one that leads me to believe this is probably over in five. Maybe it goes six. But I just think Philly's too good for Atlanta. It's a good story. Trae Young has played terrific basketball. But I do believe this is a mismatch. Atlanta, Philly, game two tonight, 5:30 start time on that one. And then in the nightcap, it's the Jazz and the Clippers. 8 o'clock tip-off, David Locke, Ron Boone. They'll bring you the play-by-play call beginning at 7:50 right here on KOAL. Full slate of games in Major League Baseball. The first pitch will be thrown at 5:05. We get the Braves and the Phillies. Drew Smyly going up against Aaron Nola. Both of these teams struggling right now, both under the 500 barrier. We get the Dodgers and the Pirates at 5:05, the Mets and the Orioles, along with the Rockies, Marlins, Astros travel the Red Sox. We get the Brewers and the Reds, the Mariners and the Tigers, and the Nationals and the Rays. So a lot of 5 o'clock baseball. 6:05 tonight, the Giants take on the Rangers. The Giants still in first place in the National League West. Alex Wood will take the mound going toe-to-toe against Jordan Lyles of the Rangers in an interleague matchup. Yankees-Twins coming up. The Yankees at 31-29. The Twins, at 24-35. Jordan Montgomery will take the ball for the Yanks. Blue Jays-White Sox at 6:10 tonight. White Sox been playing good baseball. Right now, 36-23. 6:15, it's the Indians and the Cardinals. 7:30 tonight, Royals-Angels, Diamondbacks-A's. And then the nightcap tonight, it's the Cubs and the Padres. Zach Davies going up against his old team. Danilson Lamet will take the ball for the Padres. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. It is Football Tuesday, so we have a football segment coming your way. We'll talk the ramifications of the Julio Jones deal, which went down over the weekend. We'll also talk to Helper American Legion manager Dakota Cincinnero's. Helper's on fire right now. 6-0 to start the season after earning two more wins last night against Roosevelt. That's what's straight ahead right here on Drive Time Sports. Back right after this.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow.
We're going to talk Legion baseball. It's been a great start for the Helper Squad. They were on the road this past weekend in Idaho. They come back perfect 4-0. You can get your complete recap of all four games right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. Last night, two league wins over Union in Roosevelt, so that improves their overall record to 6-0. And now preparing for a home tournament Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Joining us in studio right now to talk about that, we have manager Dakota Cincinnero's. And Coach, as always, a pleasure. I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
It's always fun to talk about the Legion squad. And, well, there's a lot of good things to talk about. Six games, six wins. You guys go to Idaho, you pick up four straight wins, and I think that's a perfect place to start. Wood bat tournament, and it really didn't matter. You guys had plenty of offensive run support, but in the same sense, the pitching was phenomenal at this Idaho tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually the case with wood bat tournaments. Your pitchers usually, you know, dominate a little more so than they do with the metal bats. But we got some great outings out of all of our pitchers to start the weekend off. Jordan Fawcett had 15 Ks on the mound against the host team, Minico. We scored 9 runs on, I think, 11 hits. And, you know, we didn't really have any issue in that game. Nothing went wrong. I mean, everything was going right for us. And Jordan struck out the first 9 guys of the game and just continued to pound the zone. I think he had 2 walks. And it was really one of the best outings I think I've seen him throw in the years that I've coached him. So it was a good start to the tournament. You know, then we picked up 2 more wins on Friday against Blackfoot and Burley, and then rounded up the tournament with Jerome and got a win there to head home on Saturday. So Four wins to start there. I mean, it was a fun tournament. It was great weather, you know, and it was a good start to our summer program with four wins. And I thought, you know, we hit the ball really well. We played really good defense the whole weekend. And like I said, our pitchers did an excellent job. So it was four good wins. And then we followed it up last night at Union with two wins. There it was our first two league games to send us right into our tournament here the rest of the week down in Helper.
Going back to the Idaho tournament, and we'll jump into league play here in just a moment, you really never know what you're going to see down there. So in comparison to what you saw, I guess, throughout the entire high school season, what was the competition like in that tournament?
It was a little bit below what I felt like our competition was with our high school season. Idaho's got some good teams, and those four programs usually have good teams. I felt like they were a little weaker than they usually are. Minico's usually got an excellent program, and I think, you know, talking to him, he's got a lot of young players this year with his Legion program that they're trying to bring along and develop for his high school season. They won their district during the high school season, and then they've lost some kids, you know, to graduation that they just didn't bring back for the summer. But they typically have a good program there. I think 2 years ago when we went there, we beat them 2-1 on the nightcap game that first night. So they usually have really good competition. I think this year it was just a little bit weaker. Burley was missing a couple of their stud arms just because they had pitched earlier in the week, so they didn't throw against us. They played some younger kids that game as well. Jerome usually struggles. They're usually the weakest team out of that tournament. And then Blackfoot, I felt like, you know, they had a good team. They scrapped and fought. But, I mean, we have a good program. We have a lot of good baseball players, and that competition level was a little bit lower than what we've seen the high school season. And our high school season has just prepped us, you know, to be good and to compete. And that's what I felt like we did. But in comparison to our high school season or, you know, what the competition is that we see in Utah, it was a little bit below what we see. And we're going to see some good teams the rest of the summer. You know, I just hope that some of those games help prep us, like I said, for what we've got coming up. And if anything else, you know, it was great work for our pitchers. I felt like, you know, we walked a ton less guys than we usually do. And walks drive me nuts, and it's just free bags for the other team. And I felt like we did a really good job of throwing strikes, and that was our main focus. I mean, and with bats, you know, like I said, it's more of a pitcher's game. And so if you're up there throwing strikes and you're forcing guys to put the ball in play with wood bats, it's tough at this level, you know, to find hits and find holes in the defense. And so that's what our guys did. I mean, they just threw a ton of strikes and kept hitters off balance and kept our defense involved. And we did an excellent job behind them the whole week.
Carrying over the wood bats, you got the wood bat tournament in Helper this week, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But you used wood bats last night against Roosevelt.
Yeah, you know, with last weekend being the wood bat tournament and this week being a wood bat tournament, our guys just continued to swing wood last night. And you know, we put up 10 runs in the first game and beat Union 10-0. And then the second game we beat them 7-0 in five innings. We had to cut that a little bit short due to it getting dark. But yeah, I mean, we had a lot of good hits, and scored a lot of runs. And so, you know, it hasn't really made a difference with us with wood bats so far. I felt like our guys have done a good job at having a good approach at the plate and just going up there with the single mentality, and that's what we're doing, and we're scoring some runs because of it. So the wood bats haven't been an issue for us so far, and I hope we can continue that through this week with our tournament here at home.
Yeah, looking at the box score, going back to the Idaho tournament, I'm sure it was similar last night as well. You have a variety of kids hitting. I mean, it's this guy's going 2-for-4, this guy's 3-for-4, this guy's got one RBI across the board. I mean, it's kind of been a group effort as far as getting it done at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, I the lineups that we've put together so far, I mean, obviously we're 6-0, so, you know, everybody's doing their part. I feel like 1-9, there's everybody can be in any of those spots. I mean, it's hard to put a lineup together with this team. You know, we put somebody in and they're producing, and so it's hard to pull guys out and put other guys in. But you know, we've done a good job so far in the first six games of getting everybody time. Everybody's gotten at bats so far. Everybody's gotten innings, and we're moving guys around and shuffling them around, which is something we talked about for this summer program. Just trying to find some guys to play some different spots because of what we're losing with our seniors. And moving forward into our high school season next year, I just feel like we've got a good group of baseball players that can play any position, and so. We're playing with that so far, and trying to move them around. And 1-9, I mean, it's competitive. I mean, we've got guys that can swing the bat and play positions, and so I'm confident in every guy that we've got on that older team right now jumping in into any spot. And we've got a ton of arms, you know, to throw on the mound. And so They've made it easy on me so far. They're doing a good job, and hopefully, like I said earlier, we can just continue that through this week and into our league play.
Again, our guest right now is manager Dakota Cincinnurus of the Hopper American Legion squad, who started the season 6-0 so far. Coach, now you'll shift your focus to the CJA Smuin Memorial Tournament Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You guys get 4 games in 4 days, and as far as Wednesday, Thursday, Friday go, Hopper gets to play under the lights, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, that's the place to be. I mean, I love that atmosphere. I love our park out in Hopper, and you can't beat playing under the lights. We've got, like you said, the 3 late games on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We started 8 o'clock out there. I believe we've got ALA on Thursday, and then we back that up with Alta on Friday, and then we wrap up our pool play on Friday night against Stansbury. So 3 good teams. Stansbury had a good high school season. That's going to be a competitive team. That should be 3 good games for us, and under the lights, you can't beat that atmosphere. And then determine based on what we do for those 3 games, we'll determine our seeding for Saturday's game. So 4 games coming up, and like we mentioned earlier, it's a Woodbat tournament. So it's a little bit something different than we've done in the past with that Helper tournament. But we've got some good teams coming down. It should be some good baseball to come out and watch.
The kids get excited playing with wood bats?
Yeah, they love it. I mean, it's something different than they usually get to do. The metal bats are they're fun but they like that wood bat. They like the atmosphere. They like the way the game is, and you can't beat that sound when the ball hits the bat with the wood bat.
Doubt.
I mean, that's an awesome sound, and they do. They get excited. They were excited to go to Idaho, and they were excited that we're changing our Helper tournament up to do that as a wood bat tournament this year too. So, and they've done a good job at swinging them. So, I mean, they've scored a lot of runs so far, and hopefully we can continue that. And I'm fine with them swinging wood bats the whole summer if we're going to keep hitting the ball the way we're hitting it. So, but they do. They get excited. They like it.
One of the things that I was curious to see is what the mindset would be from the team, because I could see it going one of two ways: losing in the state championship game, are these kids excited to get out and play ball, or are these kids burned out? Maybe a little discouraged. You're 6-0. It must not be discouraged.
Yeah, no, they're they get excited, and this is a good group of baseball players. These guys have played together for a long time, and as I mentioned earlier, it's hard to put a lineup together. They're a talented group, and I think it helped having a couple weeks off there after the high school season ended. I mean, 7 games in 3 days at that state tournament was a lot of baseball, and I could tell that they were burned out. They needed a break. They were tired. So we gave them a little bit of a break there. We got back into the swing of things, and they seem excited. They're focused when we play, and they're having a good time together so far, and winning's always fun, so that helps. But they're doing a good job, and I think they're excited for this summer season.
You guys have a great group of young kids. I mean, we're talking about the 19U team, and that's a little vague. I know it's any kid under 19 because you also have the 17U team. But you have a lot of kids that you've got to be excited about coaching at the high school, seeing some of these 16, 17, 15-year-old kids and the way they're performing.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first summer that we've had, 3 teams that we've put into Legion baseball, and that's great. I mean, that only helps our high school program out that much more. Our 15-year-olds played Roosevelt last night as well, and they beat them 21-6 in the first game and then 15-0 in the second game, so... there's a good group there of 15-year-olds, and they're going to be good baseball players for years to come in our high school program. And then our middle team, our 17-year-old team, they haven't played yet, but there's a ton of good baseball players in that group as well, and very easily could be playing up on our 19-year-old team, with the numbers that we've got, and they'll see some time as the summer goes on at that level. But you can't beat having 3 programs in Legion baseball, and getting that competition, getting that experience. It's a good league to play in, and like I said, it's only going to make our high school program that much better with the competition they're facing. So we have a ton of good baseball players, and I'm excited for our high school season next year, obviously for the summer to play out and see how that goes. But they're going to have a good high school season next year just with the experience they're getting this summer.
When you look at the landscape of the Legion League in general right now, how is it in comparison to what we've seen in years past? I mean, are you happy with what you're seeing from all around the state?
Yeah. Legion's been something that, back when I played, I think we've talked about it. It was kind of a dying league. There was teams dropping out and getting into other leagues. And over the last 5 to 8 years, I mean, we've just had a huge increase in Legion teams. This year's the most we've had in probably 10 years.
Great.
And so that's going to help. That competition level's there, and there's a lot of really good programs there in Legion baseball. We've got teams clear up north in Logan and Box Elder and places like that, and then throughout the valley, those teams that have been there, and then we've got teams that, like Lone Peak, who won it last year, and You know, down south there's a team in Hurricane. So, I mean, we're spread out throughout the state, and there is a lot of good teams, a lot of good competition, and I mean, they're great high school programs that are bringing those kids into Legion baseball, and we're all on the same playing level for Legion ball. You know, there's no classifications with Legion ball. So we're getting a lot of good competition in with this summer, and a lot of good teams that we're going to face, and we're going to have to compete and play good baseball in order to win.
Coach, it's always fun to get you in. Congratulations on that 6-0 start. An opportunity for people to get out and watch you guys in your own backyard. 4 games in 4 days, so I know we'll have plenty more to talk about next week. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
We will continue to talk about the Legion squad throughout the week. Again, the home tournament taking place Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You can get your schedule at CastleCountryRadio.com. Let's pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll talk NFL and the ramifications of the Julio Jones trade. That's coming up next.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAN. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
So now you open my eyes.
Here comes the quarterback, Burrow, looking for a block, and he got it up in the front by Hopkins into the end zone. Touchdown!
Back on Drive Time Sports. We're going to talk NFL football. Last week, I'm on vacation, so of course Julio Jones gets dealt. That's typically the way things go. We also had some sad news earlier today coming out of the NFL that Jim Fossil has passed away at the age of 71. And, well, we have some mini camps going on right now. It is a fun time to be around the game of football and, of course, talk about the game of football as we do every Tuesday. We'll bring in Vinny Rondinelli, who's joining us over the phone. Vinny, a pleasure. Thank you.
Always fun to talk to you, Jordan, and we're getting closer. We're getting closer. There's news. Training camp, you know, is 5 weeks away, 6 weeks away. So starting to get exciting, man. Starting to get exciting.
It really is, and I know that the reports over the next couple of weeks, but the Packers are going to be just completely under the radar. They're going to be completely under a microscope throughout this entire offseason. It doesn't matter what the story, how minuscule or how big it's going to be. All eyes are going to be on Green Bay, and it's a story that you and I have kind of shied away from, Vinny. We've talked about it at times, never in great length, but again, it pops up today that Aaron Rodgers is now officially a holdout. I guess yesterday that news comes out, he's officially a holdout. This is a story that's not going away until Aaron Rodgers decides it's going to go away.
Yeah, and you know, Aaron Rodgers spoke, and you know, he didn't bring up a lot of huge, you know, earth-breaking news. You know, he did speak a little bit on it, and, you know, it's always going to be a story because you're talking about a guy that, I mean, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And this is a story, you know, this time of year typically slows down as far as major football news. There's always little things going on, roster moves, whatnot. You know, there was a bombshell with Julio, but normally this time of year it's minor news. Going into training camp, and this one's always going to be a big story because of who it is, Aaron Rodgers. And everybody knows there's been a little bit of trouble there. You know, it's been blown out of proportion, probably. And no matter, like you said, no matter what, this is going to be, you know, a story all the time. And I think this story doesn't go away until, you know, training camp or even the first preseason game when Aaron Rodgers, you know, throws his first pass to Davante Adams, and then maybe it just kind of, by then, maybe it quiets down. But until then, Jordan, this is going to be a story at all times.
If we see him throw a pass to Davante Adams, yes, the story will go away, at least until next offseason. But, Vinny, as you mentioned, typically this time of the year, it is a little bit quiet. Julio Jones, I think he was kind of bamboozled, I guess is what you could say, on national TV with Shannon Sharpe a couple of weeks ago. I don't believe that Julio Jones knew he was on national TV, and I believe reports have said that Julio didn't know he was on national TV. The Falcons, Julio, they tried to get this trade done behind closed doors. We had no idea where Julio would go, but there were a couple of teams that appeared to be suitors. It turns out he goes to Tennessee in a package that revolves around a second-round pick. And before we talk about the fit in Tennessee, we have to evaluate the wide receiver market because I don't believe that Tennessee gave up a lot to get Julio. But when you look at the ramifications of it, 32 years old, he's had a bad hamstring, he only played 9 games last year, and the NFL is really moving in a different direction as far as the wide receiver position goes. We've used the term cheap speed here on this show several times. You're seeing teams grab guys now in the 4th, 5th, 6th round that can change the landscape of the field. Does that devalue someone like Julio Jones, and is that ultimately why Atlanta basically got a two for him.
I believe so, Jordan. I mean, the rules are, I mean, we talk about this all the time in the show. The NFL is designed nowadays. They have designed the NFL, for better or worse, for the offense to succeed. The rules allow the receivers to, you know, you don't have to be an all-pro receiver to have 1,000 yards anymore because, the rules allow you to get open. And so you're seeing teams maybe not totally devalue. That's a bad word as far as the whole thing, but you're seeing the need for top receivers maybe, you know, not viewed the same way. Now, if a receiver's 25 years old and has 1,500 yards, yeah, there's probably a difference. But you got to remember, last year, you know, off the top of my head, I don't remember, but I think DeAndre Hopkins, there was a second-round pick involved and a player. They picked up some money. But DeAndre Hopkins, you know, maybe the best receiver in the game, top three anyways, right? We can agree on that. And the Cardinals improved by, I think, four games.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, it really is.
Now, as far as Julio now, if Julio's healthy, I mean, I know he's 32 years old, but Julio is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I even think after last year, yards per game, I think he's the greatest of all time, average yards per game receiving in his career. If Julio's healthy, A.J. Brown and Julio with Derrick Henry, I think this is an awesome fit. I think it was the perfect fit for him in Tennessee. I don't think there's that many people suiting, and I think the money was a factor. I know people say, you know, that you can always find money. But this late in the game, Jordan, you know, June, with the cap down this year and teams already using all these tricks to get under the cap, if another 15, I think there's only a couple places he could go.
Yeah, and there was some bookkeeping that was done earlier today by Tennessee as well, because I think they were at 3.5 when they acquired Julio. They restructured Ryan Tannehill's contract. He was set to make 24.5 this season, but now they convert a portion of that signing bonus, creates more than like $15 million in cap space for this season. Julio's fully guaranteed at 15.3. There you go. You're back at $3 million. All you had to do was restructure your quarterback. I mean, really, it is that simple, and that's why I never panic as far as the NFL the NFL cap situation is concerned.
True. But then again, a lot of ownership doesn't want to pay that money up front. I mean, Tennessee had to make an investment because when they convert this to Tannehill, they got to pay him up front. So, you know, a lot of ownerships maybe don't want to write that check. Some don't want to mess their cap up moving forward. There's some different things to go through. Every team is different. But I really think that the cap was part of it for some of the teams. Some of the teams, you know, they have two receivers, so why trade for Julio? You know, if you have two receivers, why give up a pick and pay $15 million for, maybe an upgrade, but how much of an upgrade?
You know, Vinny, when I look at this deal, the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that Julio was on his way to Tennessee was, how much better has life been for Ryan Tannehill since he got away from Adam Gase? My goodness.
Yeah, he hit the jackpot, too. And the first thing that popped in my mind was Derrick Henry was jumping up and down going, all right, I run against a lot of eight-man boxes. Well, double-team Julio. If Julio's healthy and A.J. Brown's healthy, good luck with that. And then I thought to myself, I was trying to remember off the top of my head, who's the third receiver in Tennessee? And I think it's Josh Reynolds, right? I think it's one of your guys.
It is. Yeah, Josh Reynolds made the jump from L.A. to Tennessee, yes.
And it took me a minute to figure it out. I was like, okay, well, it's Josh Reynolds now. If you're Josh Reynolds, you've got to be jumping up and down going, all right, nobody is going to be rolling coverage to me. Nobody is going to be paying attention to me because right now I am the fourth option on this football team. He should see a lot of good looks. So even as a fourth option or third receiver, Josh Reynolds got to be pretty happy right now, right? I mean, honestly, Josh Reynolds got to be thinking, man, I just come from Sean McVay where he grew me as a player. I cashed in, made a little money here. Now I'm going to play with Julio, A.J. Brown. And if we go three wides with Derrick Henry in the backfield, I might have a linebacker or a safety on me because I don't know they're going to even want to go to nickel. And he's got to be pretty happy about that.
No question. No question. This Titans offense is going to be extremely fun to watch. Now, look, this is a team that is far from not having any flaws, and I think we have to keep everything in perspective. Defensively, Vinny, I still worry about this Titans team. You just have to believe that now maybe that masks a little bit of the deficiencies that we'll see on the defensive side of the ball.
And, you know, for Vrabel, he's got to take ownership. You know, here's a guy that prided himself on being a role player and a key player on a winning team, winning franchises, Pittsburgh. New England, Ohio State, cut his teeth, even in Tennessee, Houston, they had some good defense there. Watt was healthy back in the day. They won games with some defense. So this is a guy that comes from good defense. He's been around it. For them, I think it's health, though. I mean, Janoris Jenkins, Caleb Farley at the corners, those guys have to stay healthy. Christian Fulton last year they drafted. He's got some skills. You know, I think we both like him coming out. He was injured last year. The linebacker Brown was injured last year. Bud Dupree coming over. You know, Jeffrey Simmons a full year off the knee. If these guys are healthy, you got to think, hey, you only have to play top 15 defense, and you got to be the favorite in that division right now. If they play top 15 defense, just average defense, I think they got a chance to make a deep run.
I agree. And it leads me, I guess, to the next topic. And I don't know if this had anything to do with the Carson Wentz deal, but I sit back and I look at a 2-4. How did Indianapolis let this happen?
You know, for Indy, they're very patient, and they have a way about them. Ballard's been that way. You know, he gave up a 2 for a quarterback. I believe Wentz is only 26, 27 maybe, just
yep.
Jordan?
Yep.
Okay. You give up a 2 for that, and you pay money for that, are you going to give up another 2 for a 32-year receiver when you really like T.Y. Hilton, like Pittman, the Ohio State kid's coming back? I mean, that's a lot of receiver capital you're putting into it. Now, I'm with you. You're thinking, hey, take a swing at this. You know, I know your Rams inquired. That's come out that your Rams inquired, and they do. Your Rams swing big. I would assume the Chargers inquired. I would hope they did. I don't know. The Seahawks. But when you look at it, I think for them teams, they have a lot of money invested already in receivers, and they weren't going to. For Tennessee, let's be honest, after A.J. Brown, there's Josh Reynolds, and then what?
Yeah.
Can you tell me who the tight end is right now? I can't.
No, they were decimated in free agency, and that's the other thing that we have to remember with this Tennessee Titan team. This is not the same Titan offense from last year. Plus Julio Jones. They were affected by free agency in a major way. Aside from the fact they added Josh Reynolds, okay, whatever, Vinny, this team lost some key pieces.
Yes, they did. And for them to stay up, you know, with their cap situation, again, they made a move there, which is fine. But they were up against the cap. They had to make a move, and they took a swing at it. And you can't blame them for that because that's a position of need, a good player, and you got to like what they did. Now, I really like this team going forward. And, you know, last year I told you that was my pick to go all the way in the AFC, and they laid an egg in the playoffs there in that second round. And I think they were disappointed. They had a bitter taste in their mouth, and I think they have to go back to the drawing board. And, you know, they took some risks. Let's be honest. Julio's coming off an injury-plagued season, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Bud Dupree. They paid a lot of money for a guy that really only played good football the last 2 years, and last year he blew an ACL. So there's an injury factor. You know Janoris Jenkins quite well. He's one of your former Rams. When he's right, hey, this might be a pretty good nickel corner. Fulton was injured last year. Caleb Farley had what? Let's be honest. Caleb Farley had top 10 talent in the draft.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no question.
Top 10 talent. Injury concerns. So, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, 2 years ago, they took a chance on a D-tackle that had, you know, top 10 talent. They picked him back into the first round because he was coming off a blown leg, blown knee. So these guys have to round into shape and be healthy, but you got to figure, you know, Harold Landry on the weak side, Dupree, Jeffrey Simmons, the Brown kid at linebacker, Evans from Alabama. You know, we like Bayard at safety, Fulton, Caleb Farley and Jenkins. If that team's right and healthy, that defense could play a lot better than top 15.
Vinny Rondinelli, again, our guest right now as we talk all news coming out of the NFL. Vinny, we have to end on a rather sad note. The news came out earlier today that Jim Fossil had passed away at the age of 71 years old. He was living in Las Vegas, died of a heart attack while under sedation. When you look at what this man accomplished, he was around the game of football for a really long time. And you also can't forget that he was the head coach of the Utah Utes from 85 to 89. I mean, he was well-traveled, been around the game the majority of his life. He passed that love on to his son, who has just been an outstanding special teams coordinator in the NFL. It's a sad day, no question, for the sport of football.
Absolutely. These guys that are lifers, you know, they did a lot. This is a classic guy, been around, done a lot of things, coached the Super Bowl in New York, called plays at different stops. You know, well-respected guy. And it is a sad day. You know, he has a son that's, like you said, another one of your former Rams. Bones Fossil is one of the top special teams guys in the NFL right now. You know, there is it's sad these guys have been around forever and been around the game of football, well-respected. I think he did some developmental league stuff there later in his career after the NFL. I think he took on the indoor league and the UFL and different things like that to help younger players get better. So, again, another Utah U. Sad day. Sad day. As a good football coach and a well-respected, good man. So, bad note,
Vinny, it is always fun to get you on the show to talk NFL football. The storylines are going to start popping out at us, I think, a little bit more frequently. Look forward to getting you back in the studio soon. Thank you again.
Always fun to talk to you, Jordan. And, it's going to be a lot of fun. And, football guys like us never ends.
Never ends. Nope, but you're around. Thanks again, Vinny. We'll talk soon.
Perfect.
We've got a break one more time. We'll return, put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports right after this.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz.
We're about 3 hours away from tip-off. Jazz Clippers, game one of the Western Conference semifinals tonight. How good are these Western Conference playoffs? Last night, Phoenix, Denver. It's not a surprise to me that Phoenix takes game one. I think that's going to be a phenomenal series. And remember, Denver has gotten to this point without Jamal Murray. And they've done it basically with Nikola Jokic, the Joker, who has been named MVP of the 2020-21 season. I have no problem with that. I thought LeBron was the front runner. He went down. I thought Embiid had an opportunity. Couldn't stay healthy. I think it was fairly easy to give the Joker the MVP award. Not a surprise at all. That is official, however. We also know that Tom Thibodeau has won Coach of the Year. So it was not Quinn Snyder. It was not Monty Williams either. It was Tom Thibodeau. Couple of awards coming out in the NBA. But I don't know if you could ask for anything more as far as the Western Conference playoff scene is set up for us here in these two series to determine who will play for the Western Conference championship. The Clippers and Jazz very easily could be a Western Conference title matchup. Again, the Clippers kind of picked their poison. Had they played out correctly at the end of the regular season, they would have been a 3 seed, and we wouldn't be previewing the Jazz and Clippers. Yeah, they were in a position to control where they wanted to go. This is the route they wanted. Now they have the Utah Jazz in round two. And I keep going back to the idea of small ball in this series. And it's probably very hard for you to understand unless you watch that Mavericks-Clippers series. Because Ivica Zubac for the Clippers, he was unplayable after the first 2 games. And Ty Lue realized this, made the adjustment. And what the Clippers basically did, they put 3 shooters around Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And they got quality performances as well in doing so. Luke Kennard was not bad. Marcus Morris, Reggie Jackson, they have shooters. So when they put 3 shooters around Kawhi, who was deadly in that series, he had a couple of games where it reminded us all why the free agent frenzy around Kawhi Leonard a couple of seasons ago existed. He was that good. Yeah, you put shooters like Marcus Morris and Reggie Jackson around him, small ball, it's going to pull you out. Kawhi can do some damage. Now, as far as Dallas, they tried to counter that with a zone defense, and the Jazz aren't going to have to do that because once you pull Rudy Gobert away from the basket, he's still pretty good. He's not useless defensively away from the basket. We're talking about a man who probably is going to win his third Defensive Player of the Year award for a reason. Rudy can guard outside of 10 feet. And if you want to throw Zubac out there against Gobert, Gobert is going to eat him alive. That's why I think the Clippers go small ball, and the Jazz are going to have to find a way to adapt to that. Serge Ibaka, his health, huge question mark going into this series. That could affect the idea of playing small ball, but nonetheless, that's the story for me to follow in this series. How do the Jazz respond to what the Clippers throw at them? A lineup that can be downright deadly, especially if Kawhi is clicking the way he did in that Mavericks series. Mike Conley's health. We talked about this. He will not play in tonight's game. This is a guy that has the ability to score off the dribble. And when you look at the pick and roll, he shot a career-high three-point percentage this season. He is so crucial to what the Jazz do. We talk so much about Donovan Mitchell. We talk about Rudy Gobert. I have praised Joe Ingles here on this show. I still don't think Mike Conley gets the credit that he deserves. He wasn't even a legit all-star. He was a replacement all-star. He's been so good. What Utah does offensively, he plays such a big part in. And so with no Mike Conley, I just don't know that Utah can win this series. You got to hope that Conley is able to bounce back and at least give Utah some consistent minutes at some point in time of the series. I expect a lot of three-point shots to be made in this series. The Clippers, they have a great group of deep-range shooters. I mean, they hit 41% of their shots from deep in the regular season. That's insanity when you think about it. The Jazz hit 38.9%. I think we see a lot of three-point shots in tonight's game. I'm looking forward to it. It has all the makings of being a Western Conference championship matchup. Can the Clippers steal home court? They played great ball after dropping two straight to the Mavericks. Remember, they basically won four out of five games. They did win four out of five games against a pretty good Dallas team after dropping games one and two. It's a big one tonight. 8 o'clock tip-off, 7:50. We'll get you out to David Locke and Ron Boone. Out of time of this edition of the show. Always a pleasure to be along with you. Tomorrow we'll talk some Major League Baseball. Bill Lasky will join the show. Haven't heard from Bill in a couple of weeks, so I'm looking forward to that. Be safe. I am out.